Let's go back to the book of the beginnings once more, Genesis chapter 3, where we find out how everything that was very good in Genesis chapters 1 and 2 suddenly had bad involved. We suddenly see the appearance of evil. Satan comes to call in the form of a serpent in the Garden of Eden and gets first Eve, and then through Eve, Adam, to doubt God, to not believe God, and to, of their own free will, sin against God. And so God comes calling on the day of the first sin and calls them to account. Unfortunately, when he gives them the chance to confess, neither Adam nor his wife Eve fesses up. Instead, Adam blames his wife and God, who created his wife, and Eve blames the serpent. And so God now begins to hand out the penalties, the consequences, against the three individuals involved in the first sin. These consequences radiate forward in time to our very day. They are still in effect, and we have some good news that's in the middle of it that comes up in the very first handing out of a penalty, and that is to Satan himself, to the serpent. So let's go ahead and pick up the story again, Genesis 3:14. So he who is God said to the serpent, "Because you've done this, cursed are you above all livestock, above all beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and dust you shall eat all the days of your life." And so that is either about how serpents ended up crawling on the ground today, or possibly how Satan faces subservience because of his part in this rebellion. Verse number 15, "I will put enmity," a state of warfare, "between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel." So we have a state of warfare that exists, specifically what we're thinking about, between Satan, his fallen angels, and humanity. He wants bad things to happen to us all. He has always wanted that since this incident. It seems to be the driving force behind his role in the fall, that he does not like humanity. It might be, as the traditions amongst the Islamic people, and I think the early Jewish people, that he was told he had to worship mankind because he's made in the image and likeness of God, which angels are not, and he didn't want to do it. And so he thought he could take over the universe, and this was his first shot in that long-term war. But the good news in Genesis 3:15 is the promise of the atonement, that at some time in the future, which we know it happened in AD 33, a seed of the woman, which would be Yehoshua, Jesus, the one who will save us. As the seed of woman, he lived the perfect life, the sinless life, and then laid down his life as the atonement for our sin. So he crushed Satan on the head. He destroyed his works. He broke his power base through his death and resurrection, but it did require Jesus to die to do that. And so that was the Satan hitting his heel, even as he was having his head crushed. So this is a very important passage. If you haven't memorized it, if you don't know its address, Genesis 3:15, you ought to learn it, because it becomes the go-to prophecy about how God was going to fix the problem that came up right here in our history. From this point, he now turns to Eve and lets her know what her penalty is going to be. And it is not just a penalty for her, it is going to be the consequences that radiate forward into time for all women. Because things have changed now. Later we're going to read in the law that God does not punish the children for the sins of their parents. That is a reference to eternity. God does not condemn any of us to hell because of the sin of what somebody else did. But we know that even though that's true, that the consequences of choices made by those who came previous to us do impact us. We acknowledge this in many ways in our modern world. We know that if your parents do not take good care of your health when you're a kid, that's going to have consequences for you in your later life. If your parents engage in sinful or immoral or illegal activities, that's going to impact upon you personally. It's not your fault that they did those things, but you still end up having some sort of consequence from that in your own life. That's just part of living in this fallen world. So this is where the very first consequences for humanity start. Verse number 16, to the woman he said, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. Now, it's, I think, clumsy English here that confuse people, that they would say, oh, you mean there was supposed to be pain in childbearing to begin with? Wouldn't that be bad? Why would that be part of the original creation? And my response is, it wouldn't have been part of the original creation. There was no pain and suffering and sorrow in the original creation. So it's not a matter of increasing it. The literal Hebrew is, bigging will be pain in childbirth to you. That's the idea. It's a Hebrewism that uses a verb twice in different forms to say it's going to be big. It's going to be bad. So effectively, hey, the childbirth pain is not going to be good. It'll be unpleasant. As a reminder to you that things have changed. And so all women who give birth to children to this very day face pain. And the reason is because Adam and Eve sinned, and this needs to be a constant reminder, things changed at this point in our history. So I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you will give birth to children or bring forth children. So there will still be the multiplying of the human race as God originally intended. God gave us a sexual nature, a reproductive nature, before sin came into the world. It was part of the very good plan. So we would have, all of us, I think, come into existence if Adam and Eve had not sinned. We still would have been here because the plan was to reproduce. But because of the sin, Eve is told every generation is going to come into this world with a reminder it's screwed up. There will be pain. And almost every baby comes into this world crying because of the sudden shock of leaving the warmth and the structure of mom's womb into this great big bright cold noisy world. All right, so all of that is a reminder from the very beginning. This is where the screw-up phase of mankind started. Then this, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Now, this has been commented on as a reference to you will maybe want to avoid childbirth pain by not having sex, but guess what? You're still going to have this desire to have sex and to have children, and so you're not going to be able to escape it. And some commentators have said that this is almost that biological urge, that biological necessity to reproduce, which overwhelms the pain of childbirth that is remembered from time to time. And I suppose that that might be in the midst of this, but I am more interested that the wording here parallels what will come up in Genesis chapter 4 about the bad attitude of Cain whenever he was chided by God for not being as good as his brother Abel. God basically says, you've got sin that is crouching at the door like an animal in your life. Its desire is to have you, but you must rule over it. So in that context, pretty much the same wording is all about, it's about conflict. And so I would suggest to you that this is the beginning of the conflict between husbands and wives. That your desire shall be for your husband, meaning you're going to want to call the shots, but he is the one that's going to be the head of the household. I think this is the source of all the submission passages in the New Testament. When they say, it says in the law that a wife shall submit to her husband, this is the passage they're referring back to. Now, immediately, some of your hackles go up, ladies. I understand that, because you don't like it. And part of the reason you don't like it is because men have misunderstood and applied this passage. This is not telling husbands, you get to be the boss of your wife. You can treat her as your slave. You can treat her as the one that has to be under your feet, underneath your thumb, and do anything you tell her to do. That is not the intent of this passage. Here is the reality. The first husband, when challenged with his own choice to sin by God, tried to throw his wife under the bus for it. And God is not going to let that happen ever again. In every household from Adam and Eve's time onward, every choice that's made between the couple, the husband is ultimately accountable to God for. Now, in the ideal situation of a marriage, the husband and wife are partners. That's what Adam and Eve were supposed to be from the very beginning. They were the king and the queen of the universe. They were the sovereigns, co-equal in their lives. But because sin came into the world, because the world is now screwed up and it's going to continue getting more and more screwed up as time goes by from Genesis chapter 3, there will be other free will choice times where the choices are going to be difficult. And it may be that the husband and wife may not agree on which path to take. And in those cases, some sort of chain of command has to be in action. The military does this all the time. In any group of military members, someone is in charge. Someone has to make the ultimate choice of how to carry out the mission, and they will be accountable to higher headquarters. But a smart sergeant or a smart lieutenant or whatever the rank is in a situation like that will get input from all the members of their team who know things and will factor in all of that information in order to make the proper choice. But if they choose wrongly, their team members are not at fault. They are. And so, gentlemen, that's the situation in your home right now. When you and your wife are going through life together, you guys should be talking through the choices that come up. And together, you should make those choices. Much of the time, you will be on the exact same page, so there'll be no question about it. But from time to time, you will butt heads. And the wife may present a very strong case. This is the reason we should do it this way. And the husband will then have to make the choice. Do I go with what my wife says we ought to do, which is what Adam actually did in the first sin? Or do I do what I think I ought to do? And here's the reality, husbands. If you go with what your wife wants to do and it blows up in your face, it's not her fault, it's yours. God will hold you accountable for that. You can't throw her under the bus like Adam did with Eve. It's not acceptable anymore to God. If you choose to go your path and it blows up in your face, it's your fault. You will be accountable to God for it. So the reality is, gentlemen, no matter what happens in your household, no matter what choice is made, you're accountable. Because God will not allow the husband to throw the wife under the bus ever again. That happened in the first sin. It will never be allowed again. So suck it up and do it right. And don't get yourself all full of yourself and think you're the master of the castle and everybody is your slave, because that's not the situation. And wives, the New Testament says that you need to submit to your husband in the Lord. So you need to follow his lead as long as he does not require you to do something that is sinful or wrong. Because at that point, it is your responsibility to stand up and say, no, that would be wrong. Now, I know that that might cause friction in many households, but it is important that we do not choose wrongly ever again. But the structure of the home, with the husband being the ranking member, comes from this verse, Genesis 3:16. And it's also the reason why in the church, which is an extension of the family, we are the family of God, it is certain select men who attain to a very high standard of morality that are supposed to function as the fathers of the church, the leaders, the spiritual leaders of the church. We call them the elders. We call them the shepherds. We call them the pastors, the bishops, whatever the terminology is that's in the New Testament passage you might be thinking about. They are the ones that we all are supposed to submit to, provided they do not ask us to submit to something that we know is wrong. And so that's why men are to be the spiritual leaders within the church. And so I hope that kind of helps clear up some of those New Testament passages that unfortunately have been clouded over time by people who have tried to turn church leadership into some sort of tyrannical rule, because it was never intended to be that. You may remember Jesus chided his apostles when they were trying to take those sorts of attitudes and said, it's the sinners of this world, the Gentiles of this world, that lord it over one another. It will not be so among you, the leaders of the church. The one who wants to be greatest among you must be the servant of everyone else. So the proper, godly, Christ-given directive for the leaders of the church is you are to be servant leaders. You show by example, not by bullying. All right, so let's go onward now to the penalty now handed out to Adam, the first man, which doesn't just simply impact upon husbands, men. It impacts upon everyone within humankind. Genesis 3:17. To Adam he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it." Now, if that didn't clarify what I was just saying a while ago, that Adam was in big time trouble, mister, over throwing his wife under the bus. God held him accountable. And he should have known better than to try to blame someone else for his free will choice. So because you did that, because you tried to dodge responsibility, this is what the consequences are going to be for all of humanity. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. So the reason we have sweaty, hard, repetitive work, the reason why the ground, the earth, does not want to give us the nutrients that we need to exist by easily, the reason why life is hard, is because Adam and Eve chose to sin, and therefore they lost the perfection of the gift. The creation itself came under the curse. Romans chapter 8 actually talks about this, that creation is looking forward to the revelation of the sons and daughters of God, that is, the second coming of Christ and the resurrection and transformation of the redeemed, because that's when it will be transformed. It will be released from its curse, from entropy, so that it can go back to being the way it originally was without the curse, where everything was perfect. Everything was very good. So this is where the curse on the earth began. This is the reason why plants are popping up in your vegetation or your vegetable rows that you don't want there, and we call them weeds. This is why many of the plants started developing thorns and thistles and poisons, toxins, because the entire creation suddenly starts going downhill. And having evolution, and I'm going to use that word in its technical proper sense, where things start losing their original proper design. And we have mutations pop in. Mutations are the loss of information. And when you have the loss of information, you have the loss of function. And so this is where all of our problems in the environment start creeping in, and even in the animal world. And so Adam and Eve are told, as the first for all of history of mankind, life is going to be tough, and you're going to have to work hard so that you can feed your face and keep living. Because mankind, by the way, started dying inside. His own genetic code starts unraveling at this point in history. These first few generations will live into their 900s on average, but that is more because they're bodies started out in such perfect molecular states that it took a long time for them to fall apart. And the environment was also upholding them being able to stay together for a long time. When the flood comes along and the environment changes radically, we will suddenly see the lifespan of humanity drop off precipitously until it arrives about where we're at today. All right, so by the sweat of your face you shall eat your bread till you return to the ground from out of which you were taken, for you are dust and to dust you shall return. So eventually our life force will depart from this physical body. And these bodies will then start decaying back into their component portions, that is, into the elements that make up the earth. And we use this terminology often at grave sites to remind us this is the penalty, this is the consequence that came because of the first choice to sin. Now, the book of Romans will remind us Adam and Eve were only the first ones to sin, and that's how death entered into the world. But every last one of us have joined in that by our own free will, and our death was also a consequence of our own free will choice. And it wasn't just our physical death, that came because of Adam and Eve. Our spiritual death comes because of our own free will choice. It's not Adam and Eve's fault that all of us earned hell. It was our choice. And I will emphasize that over and over again as we make our journey through Scripture, because that is the scriptural reality. Quit blaming anyone except yourself for your sin. Just like I need to always fess up. It's my fault when I sin, not anybody else. We don't want to repeat the blame game that Adam and Eve did on the day of their sin. Verse number 20 kind of wraps up this little section and prepares us for tomorrow. The man called his wife's name Chava, which is built on the word for life, or in this case, living or life giver. Now that has slid over into Greek and then finally into our English language as Eve. Chava was the original, Eve is what we use, because she was the mother of all living. So she is the only one besides God that is ever called the life giver. So Mother Eve, thank you for providing us life, but we wish you hadn't been involved in that first sin.